Okay, here we go. Now we're good. Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to talk about the astrology of January 2022. It's a new year coming up, and I'm really excited to start breaking down the astrology of the new year by first taking a look at January's astrology today. So that will be our goal. And then after I've gone through the astrology of January, I'd like to spend some time sharing stories that all of you either shared in the comments section recently or sent in to me via email. You guys shared a ton of really great stories about your favorite transits on the year. I got a lot of really great transit stories, which transit sort of really hit home for you in the past year. So we're going to share some of your stories, and then I'll share a few final reflections on the astrology of 2021 and my thoughts going into this new year. So that's our goal for today. I'd love to know where you are all coming in from in the chat box. Looks like the UK, Malibu, Dublin, Ireland, Michigan, Gettysburg, PA. Yes. Hare Krishna. Someone's saying Hare Krishna to me. Key West. Nice. West Florida. Bunch of people from Florida, Orlando, New York, Ontario. That's cool. Brazil. Amazing. South America, Wichita, Serbia. Oh, look, Colorado District 4. John. That's so memorable. I love that you put it that way. North of Ireland, Philippines, Omaha, Hong Kong, London, Cyprus. Wow. Brighton. So glad to be here with you all and sharing some thoughts on the astrology of January 2022, as well as the some final reflections and stories on the year that we just experienced. Before I do that, you know what time it is. It is the last 24 hours of my annual Kickstarter. I just want to first start off by saying a huge thank you to everyone for listening to me pitch this thing for 40 straight days. You all deserve a medal. And as someone who has no one, I've never hired marketers. I've never, you know, I've always just promoted my own programs through my blog and eventually through my YouTube channel. And I just try to be passionate and you know, honest about what my goals are and ask for support. And you guys have always been really supportive. I try to make sure that you're not just donating to an empty cause, that you guys get really good content throughout the year. And also that there's, you know, an abundant amount of rewards. Most of the money from this Kickstarter comes from people donating to support this channel who are also getting a year worth of, you know, a year long class in Hellenistic astrology. A lot of the people who donate are getting the astrology of 2022 videos. So I really try to make sure that, you know, you're getting something for your donation and that it's a win-win for everybody. So thank you so much for your support. We are, I just got to share this. I mean, this is incredible. We're at 1,455 backers and $328,000 that we've raised. Now, Kickstarter and the credit card processors take about 10% of that off, a little bit less. That's really frustrating. Then you pay taxes. So it goes down a bit pretty quickly. And then we use this to pay our staff, to pay speakers throughout the year. We are taking a good chunk of this to build a community herbal medicine garden on an acre of land that we own. And that will translate into a place where people can come and learn about actual care of living plant teachers. And also we give away the medicine from that garden to people who couldn't afford, you know, to see an herbalist or to get herbal medicine. A lot of the big companies that sell herbs, you're not getting it firsthand from someone who's put the care and love into growing it. Some they do, but, and you know, it's going to be expensive. So the goal of this garden is for it to be a place to, you know, teach our kids about herbs, teach people in the community about caring for herbal medicine, and then giving people herbal medicine, literally, who couldn't afford it otherwise. You guys helped with that. I mean, that's a big part of what this has gone toward. About $25,000 of this will go to different charities. If you watched my, if you watched our Bhakti Wednesday video this week, we're supporting a group called Urban Devi, which is about women's leadership and cultivating the ministry toward women in the Bhakti Yoga community. It's something I'm really passionate about. We sent $5,000 to send Bhagavad Gita's to prisons, hospitals, and hospice care centers. We took another almost $5,000 to support the renovation of a dilapidated, falling apart holy pilgrimage site in India. So, you know, you guys do a lot of good things. Our goal is not to just rack up money and, you know, just live some kind of crazy lifestyle, you know, oh great, I'm going to go buy a Lamborghini. You know, we're trying to do good things as a business, and you guys support that. Also, you make it possible for astrologers to make a good living. You know, astrologers, just like any other line of work, you know, deserve to make a living. And you guys help me with that. I just want to be honest. That's what you guys do. Patreon, Kickstarter. Astrologers rely on creating free content and then hoping that their audience will pitch in and support them through one type of subscription or Patreon or Kickstarter. That's one of the main ways that astrologers earn a living these days if you develop a larger platform. So I just want to thank you all from the depths of my heart. This is what I love doing, and I've done it for so many years, well before, you know, I received any kind of major support from people, well before I was ever doing a Kickstarter and receiving this kind of support. And it's been cool to see it grow, and to know that astrologers like myself, if you keep doing what you love and chipping away at it, can, you know, earn a good living and support a family and things like that. I remember when I first started doing astrology, one of the things I asked a mentor of mine, I asked him a horary question, and I said, I really want to do astrology, but I really want to have a family, be able to, you know, pay a mortgage and, you know, support, you know, be a supportive father and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, right now I'm pretty close to the poverty line doing astrology my first couple of years. And I don't know if I'll, you know, be able to do this and support my goals of, you know, marrying this woman that I'm with, my wife now, right? And she wants a family. And so I don't know if I can do this. And he did a horary for me, and he said, if you keep doing what you love, and I see, you know, the support will be there, and it's going to come through people who really appreciate your work and make sure you keep doing your public writing. At the time I had a blog, and I just said, okay, you know, I just kind of put my faith in it, shoved my chips to the center of the table, and have been doing full-time professional astrology for 11 years now. And I absolutely could not do it if it were not for people like you who believed in this work and who supported it. So thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You guys make my dream come true and allow me and people like me all over to have the confidence to say astrology is a legitimate career. You can be, you know, you can make a very good living doing it, and you can do good things with your career as well. You can support good things and good people and good causes and come up with innovative ways of doing business that that don't completely divide the business side of you from the spiritual side of you. We're always striving to do that. So thank you guys. Just a big thank you. Nothing more than love for the past year of content that we've created and all the support and conversation and community. And cheers to a new year ahead. We smashed our backer total last night, 1,457 backers. That's about 90 over our goal already. We have 24 hours left to go. And in this last 24 hours, we're good. We're like, we have everything we need for the year ahead. It's just how far can we set the bar now next year in terms of what we have to try to match or beat for next year's Kickstarter. So, you know, whatever we do today is already a victory. We've already crossed the finish line. Of course, if you want to pitch in, you can still pick up the Astrology of 2022. You have the day to pick up a year ahead horoscope reading. And of course, the biggest one are any of my classes, about 50% off. You can pick those up between now and early tomorrow morning. About 25 hours left in the Kickstarter. So by tomorrow morning, it will be over. So you have one day to still take advantage, pitch in if you want to. Whatever we get now, again, is just setting the bar for next year. What do we have to beat? And everything that comes in at this point is sort of bonus. And so take advantage of it if you want to. Remember, like, subscribe, share. Help this channel grow in the year ahead, and let's have fun together. I went last night. I'm going to talk a little bit about this today. I went last night to a movie with a dear astrologer friend of mine named Sean Nygaard, one of my best astrology friends. We went to a movie, went and saw this movie called Nightmare Alley. And we were talking quite a bit about, you know, the astrology of 2022 and all this stuff. And You know, I was just reflecting with him about, you know, how long we've been astrological friends. I first started talking with him as buddies back in, like, I want to say 2013. And all the years of astrology that we've seen coming in and coming out, and how often we hear people say, "So, gosh, that was a tough year. Will the astrology of next year be any better?" And I want to say that the astrology, what we both came to realize, that the astrology is never any better. It's never really any better or worse. It's always pretty much the same in terms of the kinds of things that you're going to see and experience as a student of astrology year in and year out. And I want to talk about that today after we get through the astrology of January. So that's part of our goal. I have a couple of notes and things I want to, I got Sean's permission to say, "Can I quote you on that?" And he said, "Yeah, sure." So, but at any rate, yeah, love you guys. Okay, let's dive into talking about January's astrology. Let's go ahead and, the link is in the comments section and in the description of this video if you still want to donate. I'll put it into the chat live stream right now. It's in the description of this video. It'll be in the chat box after the live stream is posted. All right, so let's turn our eyes to the astrology of January 2022. And here we go. All right, I realize the outer planets are not yet in, so let's put those in, make sure that they are included. And let's begin. So we're just going to go through all of the major transits of the month, and I'm going to just speak to them briefly. On January 2nd, my first transit of the month that I have my eye on, the ingress of Mercury into Saturn's domicile. Things become, when Mercury goes into Aquarius, obviously you're putting it now in another Saturn ruled sign, but it's co-present with its host. And it's now nicely into its evening star position. And it becomes like a little weightier, Mercury does, and more serious in the month of January, even than it was in Capricorn, but also less, I would say it becomes lighter as well, in the sense that it becomes airier. Questions about, you know, the best rational way of looking at things, getting a clear objective perspective, but also the kind of serious principled quality of the mind. You're going to see that those qualities rise quite a bit in January with Mercury moving into Saturn's sign. It's still heavy, but it's less earthy, you know, it becomes airier. So there's a little bit more of a flexibility perhaps, or a little bit less of a feeling of being in the grind, you know, the mind in the grind. That's very Mercury in Capricorn. You still have the weighty feeling of Saturn, but now it's very lofty, intellectually speaking. And you're going to feel that energy all throughout January as Mercury goes into the conjunction with Saturn eventually and so forth. We'll get to that. On the 2nd, the other thing that's happening is, of course, a new moon in Capricorn. And the new moon in Capricorn, follows on a continued emphasis with Venus and Pluto. So this moon cycle is sort of brought to you by Venus retrograde. I posted there's been a bunch of different high profile women on trial, one related to child trafficking or something like that. There was a picture that I put on my Instagram yesterday of men brawling. I think it was Jordanian lawmakers brawling over women's rights, and they were all fighting each other. And I made this joke. I said, "That's not men. Those are not lawmakers brawling. That's Venus retrograde with Pluto." You know, I'm kidding, of course, but I would say that this moon cycle ahead is going to continue the work of Venus's retrograde with Pluto. You're going to continue to see those themes coming to the surface as the moon cycle plants a seed co-present with Venus and Pluto. So I'm going to watch for those continued developments. We've talked a lot about Venus and Pluto, but that to me is the mood of the moon cycle to come, which we'll be exploring a little bit more next week, probably. If we move forward a little bit to the 8th, on the 8th, there's a very powerful moment within Venus's retrograde cycle, which is its Kazemi. So it hits the conjunction with the sun in Capricorn on the 8th into the 9th. And it's doing so as the first quarter moon is coming through. Typically, when a star like Mercury or Venus are retrograde and hitting the conjunction with the sun, it represents a kind of critical moment of alchemical transformation. Venus has been dying. Her light's been sucked down into the underworld, so to speak, disappearing behind the beams of the sun, going through the tribulation of its conjunction with Pluto. Now it's getting infused with light, and it's going to start to clarify what comes next, what lessons are learned, what actions need to be taken as it starts to blast the trumpet of its morning star phase. It's being infused with the authority and power and light of the sun. So it's a very empowered moment for this Venus retrograde process on January 8th, and one that I think will start granting us a lot of clarity. Also because we have a first quarter moon, which tends to produce action. And it's a first quarter moon in Aries. So you have the goddess, the moon goddess in the sign of the warrior. So it's a very it's a moment where the goddess is becoming very empowered as she starts to transform into the morning star, you could say, and is really blasting a war trumpet as she's doing so. Now, Venus's way of going to war is often to demand that there be a new deal, that there be a new way of doing something that is more equitable or more compassionate. Or so it's still on behalf of Venus's goals or Venus's desires that something will be done, but you're going to feel a real empowerment moment for this process that we've all been going through around January 8th. Now, if we move forward from there to the 10th, this is just a little moment that I like this month. And something I'm doing in 2022's forecast is I'm going to try in month by month and, you know, video by video, I'm going to try to speak a little bit more in 2022 to sextiles and trines. Over the course of my career, I have always focused very much in the vein of people like Richard Tarnas on the quadrature alignments, conjunction, square, opposition, square, conjunction. And I've tended to focus on those placements. But I have been surprised in the past year as I've been receiving natal transits, maybe for the first time in 11 years, that have been sextiles and trines, and they've been really, really more potent than I think I gave them credit for. And so, trines for sure, we'll be studying more of in 2022 on my channel, sextiles as well. I want to talk about this moment because one of the reasons I don't typically talk about sextiles and trines is because they're usually very brief and not as noticeable as the squares and conjunctions and oppositions, right? But here's a sextile between the sun and Neptune. And that's a moment where there's just a grace or an ease, a sense of clarity. The infusion of imagination, inspiration, emotional, a lightness that can come in with that typically very Saturnine sun position of the sun being in Saturn sign of Capricorn. So I like this just as a little moment of like grace or ease or flow or fluidity that sneaks in there right around January 10th. Remember, sextiles are of the nature of Venus, so they tend to harmonize things. We go to January 11th, and here is Mars in Sagittarius square to Neptune in Pisces. And I see this as like a very fiery prophetic moment. There's this meme circulating on Instagram that I was cracking up on yesterday. I realized like how much lighter Jupiter in Pisces is already feeling for me. I don't know if you guys can feel it, but it's just been, I've been in such better spirits, like within days of Jupiter moving into Pisces. And it's in my 11th house. So I'm like scrolling through Instagram, finding what all of my friends, my 11th house friends are saying about things, being much more social with, you know, compared to the kind of weightiness of Jupiter and Saturn sign. At any rate, Someone posted a meme of Alex Jones going off on some tirade about the universe and the glory and beauty of the universe. And he was just, he seemed like he might like literally burst into flames. And they were like, what Jupiter entering back into its own sign looks like. And I cracked up so hard because it was so funny. I could see this moment around January 11th being very similar in terms of a very fiery prophetic moment. Two Jupiter ruled signs, very expansive, but also very charismatic to the point of potentially being sort of forceful or even violent. But I like this energy as just a very passionate, inspired, big-minded Jupiterian kind of space in January, but also one that could have an aura of fanaticism around it. I'm sure, like, I can see this being one where I'll get on YouTube and talk about this and just go over the moon with, you know, just one of my tirades or sort of sermons from the stars where, you know, you're just, you feel as, it feels like you're a blazing comet when you're giving the talk. That's the kind of thing that I would easily get caught up in because I was born with Mars in an opposition with Neptune. So at any rate, watch for this one around January 11th. I think it's going to be fun, but also, it's a little holy roller, that one. So let's go to January 12th. On January 12th, we're seeing, let's see here, Uranus is basically going to station. Do I have that right? Yeah, well, it's starting to station. You're going to see it really fully station and then turn direct by the 19th. So the speed is really significantly changing, I wrote down around January 12th. But right, the 12th through the 19th, you're going to see Uranus in its retrograde slowing down and turning direct. For me personally, I've never been able to notice outer planets changing direction as readily as I can Saturn on down. But you may notice a momentum shift around that time, specifically in the whole sign house of Taurus in your birth chart, which would be worth looking at for sure. Now, let's just see. And let's go back and just find out how long has Uranus been retrograde. Let's go back and look at that because I think that might be interesting. So Uranus turned retrograde right around the end of August. So you're talking about the retrogradation being like August till right about now. And then the direct motion of Uranus comes back again. Here we go. It's right about, I want to say like the 12th through the 19th of January. So again, watch for the momentum shift in the whole sign house of Taurus, I would say. Now on January 14th, it's not an exact conjunction, but here you have Mercury and Saturn coming together very closely within the 3-degree engagement range as Mercury is stationing and turning retrograde. So you have a Mercury retrograde in Aquarius. We'll be taking a look at that through the houses later in the month. But here's the Mercury station around the 14th, and then the turning of Mercury retrograde on the same day on the 14th. And depending on which program you use and how it calculates the retrograde, I always just say the 14th into the 15th is when you'll really feel it. Mercury's retrograde with Saturn. It's interesting that Mercury doesn't reach Saturn. It turns retrograde before it can reach it. There's going to be a Mercury-Saturn feeling to this, but there's also like you're about to do something and then you're stopping, you're pulling back, and then eventually Mercury goes back through the conjunction with Saturn. So I wonder about that in terms of a kind of symbolic progression. Mercury's getting close to some kind of joining or union with Saturn, but it stops, it refrains. There's a term for that in horary astrology that's literally called refrenation. Something refrains before it can happen, turns retrograde. So if you look at this process that Mercury will go through, Mercury will not move back through the conjunction with Saturn until about March 1st and 2nd, which, by the way, also coincides with Venus finally going back through the conjunction with Pluto for the last time before it changes signs into Aquarius. Right around March 3rd. So I got to think that one of the interesting points that one could, I mean, you could speculate that there is something that Mercury is trying to get done. It refrains, has to pull back and redo, reconsider something before finally finishing something. And it seems to be tied in because Mercury will also, in its retrograde, you're going to see Mercury get back into the late place of its conjunction with Pluto. Look at this. So about the end of January, Mercury comes back through the conjunction with Pluto. It ends it by conjoining Saturn just as Venus comes back through the conjunction with Pluto. So it feels to me like this Mercury retrograde is tied in with Venus's retrograde in terms of playing along with some of the same themes or processes. And the feeling that I'm left with is one of like this Mercury retrograde is an accompanying period of revision. It's almost like whatever is Venus is demanding in the most practical earthy ways, Mercury has to go through a long process of figuring out how to implement on a more rational level, a strategic level, a level of planning, or how will this be implemented or something like that. I think you're going to see things like procedural changes or organizational changes, structures being shifted around in order to accommodate whatever Venus has been asking for. And I think that's kind of be the focus of Mercury's retrograde. That may sound a little bit abstract right now, but that's something we'll be taking apart in greater depth in January when we get to that retrograde, this idea that I'm communicating right now about Mercury sort of having a role to play in whatever Venus is trying to get done. But more on that later. Let's go forward to January 16th. Here's a major moment that we can't forget about. How about the sun conjoining Pluto? That's usually for me, sun Pluto conjunctions usually represent a moment of catharsis. They can signal a small, depending on where it's landing in your chart, a small shift that has long-term impacts that are big. It's it's a transit that lasts about a day. But when the sun hits Pluto, it's as though our intentions, our ambitions, our sense of purpose is temporarily flipped on its head or exposed for what it is, or there's a plot twist that comes with Sun-Pluto conjunctions that even though they only last a day or so, the stuff that kind of bubbles up, the powerful stuff that comes up from that subterranean space clarifies and starts shifting our course in some way. So I watch for that as a very powerful moment about mid-January that we'll be exploring as well. Now on the 17th, just a day later, this is also a very cathartic full moon in Cancer that will be opposite that Pluto. So the full moon is also, you know, pretty intense. Now, especially full moon in Cancer, I think about the more emotionally vulnerable spaces in our lives, home, family, and the patterns around home and family or our living environment, intimate relationships, the places in our lives where we feel like we belong, there's a sense of home or community that's a little bit more like with the moon, I always think of like clannishness, you know, like you're part of a clan and maybe not so good. Sometimes maybe, you know, it could be good or bad is what I'm trying to say. But I think of this as a pretty emotionally intense full moon because of the opposition to Pluto and also things coming to the surface that are being seen that could be revealing and somewhat shocking and emotionally, not easy to deal with, frankly. So we'll see how that full moon works. But I think that's probably one of the most challenging spots of the month is the sun conjoined Pluto followed the next day by the full moon in Cancer opposite Pluto. Now, depending on what system you use, for some people, the nodes will be shifting to the Taurus-Scorpio axis on January 18th if you're using the true nodes. They've already shifted for me as a mean node user, but worth mentioning. I think this is one of the most important shifts for Mars in the year ahead, which is that on January 24th, Mars will enter its exaltation in Capricorn and be co-present with Venus, where by March, the two will be conjoining together in the very last degree of Capricorn. See, as Venus is retrograde, even though Mars is a slower moving planet, Mars will be catching up with Venus. This is interesting. I like this, like subtle symbolism like that. Like, what does it mean when Venus is slowing down and then Mars is is for once sort of moving faster than Venus and almost catching or overtaking Venus? That's something that we'll be exploring a little bit more probably in the month of February. But Mars ingressing into Capricorn in its exaltation gives us a very powerful, very productive, you know, Mars with a head full of steam. And all of the more machismo qualities of Mars will be amplified. What I like about this is that I think that because Venus and Mars are going to come together, that Mars is getting in, an exalted Mars is getting in on the cause of Venus. So I could see some advocacy in our lives personally or even collectively that starts stepping up around the kinds of processes that Venus in her retrograde has been presenting us with. Anyway, it's a very powerful Mars coming in. A lot of, you know, effective Mars energy starts rolling in around the end of January. Just a few days later, on January 28th, you're going to see Venus stationing. Here you can see Venus stationing, and Venus will turn direct. So the Venus retrograde comes to a conclusion, and that's happening under the dark moon as Mars is starting to catch up with Venus. And as we're just about to have a new moon in Aquarius as well. So that should be a very interesting period. The fact that Venus is stationing under a dark moon to me is very interesting. I suspect a pretty profound moment of culmination around that time, a feeling of the completion of the process, but pretty deep moment of completion, a signature of depth and shadow around its completion, which is, you know, it's interesting to see that. And again, something to unpack when we get closer to the time at the end of January. So Venus is finally direct by the 29th. On the 28th, one last thing to see is that Mercury's retrograde will take it through one more conjunction with Pluto. So there you can put it all together. Mercury comes back through the conjunction with Pluto, Venus turns direct, Mars is catching up with Venus, a dark moon is coming through. See what an interesting culminating sequence that is. I get the feeling of completion and resolution, but not an easy one, not an altogether easy one. So I would say the first half of the month has a lot of moments that I'm pretty excited about and a lot of continuing the good work of the Venus retrograde cycle that we're in. Second half of the month from the full moon in Cancer opposite Pluto onward is a little heavier. There's a mark of finishing a process in the air, but it's a weighty and deep and potentially painful way of closing out a process. But I don't think that, I think we're up for it. I think it'll be fine. I'm not feeling too, like, I'm not feeling like it's ominous or anything, but just like what, almost like I could see a little bit of exhaustion settling in with the end of this cycle, even as there's the feeling of like, okay, we're starting to move forward again after this long Venus retrograde process. So that's what I've got for you guys. The only other thing that I'll mention, which is kind of like, well, it's coming in, but it's technically not coming in until, you know, like the very end of January, very beginning of February. Almost might talk about this as like a beginning of February transit, is the sun's square to Uranus. So you can see, like, at the very end, that's a promising note. You know, the feeling of awakening and revolution is there in the air, right as the new moon is coming through as well. In fact, if you speed this up, and this is why I would really talk about it as the new moon signature of February 1st, right? But if you, oops, let me just back this up and try to give you guys a little bit more of a hopeful note. I'm feeling kind of bad. All right, so here you can see that the new moon lands with Saturn, but it's square to Uranus on February 1st. So to me, the beginning of February is the, you know, there's a Uranian signature that suggests there will be revival, a kind of resuscitation if the very end of January has been a heavy way of closing out. So yeah, but you'll feel that Sun Uranus energy coming through even by February, January 29th, 30th, right around there too. So, all right. That's January 2022. I hope that you're finding this useful as a way of looking at the new year. What I want to do now is moving into sharing some of the stories that you guys have sent me about your major transit of 2021. What was your major transit of the year? And let's have some laughs and reflections together here as we close out, and then some final reflections on the astrology of 2021 as well. Well, these are things that you guys sent in, and any time that you are ever experiencing an astrological transit that you would like to reflect upon, you can always use the hashtag grabbed. Remember, the name for planets in ancient astrology were grahas or grabbers, and in our lives day to day, why do we do astrology? So that we can consciously relate to, reflect upon, and participate in the unfolding of transits, because if we don't, they tend to grab us, and then we just become like puppets on little planetary strings. So this series is dedicated to exploring the ways in which the planets show up and seize us, seize our consciousness, and the way in which we reflect upon them and develop a more mindful relationship with the gods and with the archetypal energies. So you can always use the hashtag grab to share your story in the comment section. Try to keep it brief. Use a hashtag grabbed, the name of the transit, like Sun square Pluto or something like that. And then a brief description of what happened that was representative of those energies. And occasionally I do episodes where I share your stories. So we're sort of doing a 2021 grabbed event here, where we're going to just look at what some of you experienced in the past year. So this person shared about Jupiter entering their sixth house in Pisces. And this happened over the summer a little bit, and also just recently here at the end of the year. So over the summer, this person had Jupiter in Pisces enter the sixth house, a place that is often associated with selfless service and sacrifice. And Jupiter entering that house can be very benefic, even though that house can also be a very challenging place. It's not only the place of self-sacrifice, it's also and service, it's also a place that's associated with sickness and disease and warfare even and fighting. This person writes, as Jupiter ingressed into Pisces in my sixth house, I had my first interview for a position to lead a national women's nonprofit organization and proceeded through in-person interviews, the job offer and announcements, and relocation to another city, leaving corporate life behind after 25 years. Congratulations. That is a fantastic accomplishment. And of course, very representative of a very well-dignified Jupiter entering the sixth house and granting something great, a kind of promotion, but in something that is about service, nonprofit, et cetera. So this person wrote, Jupiter into Pisces, 10th house. This person had Jupiter entering their career house. Excuse me. Got a surprise job offer for art-based contract work for a makeup company on December 30th. So this person got a surprise job offer for an art-based contract work for a makeup company. There's Jupiter entering your career house in the sign in which Venus is exalted. That is a fantastic transit. Congratulations. A bunch of Jupiter into Pisces people are sharing, of course, because that's probably one of the better places that Jupiter can be and will tend to deliver good news. Just as Jupiter went into Pisces in my fourth house, place of home and family, my sister and her family moved in with me and mom, and suddenly we were six people and a cat in an apartment. They stayed the whole duration of the transit of Jupiter into Pisces over the summer when it just popped in. And by the end of it, I started looking for a new apartment. The second part of Jupiter in Pisces now finds me moving into a new home. Beautiful. That's an interesting saga of Jupiter bringing lots of people, abundance of people into your home and then a new home. This one comes as someone's talking about their one of their transits of the year. Pluto continued to conjoin with my natal sun and Mars while squaring my husband's natal Venus. My dance with Pluto has been dark and light. My husband continues to struggle with his pain and his uncertainty of our marriage, while I continue to patiently stand for our reconciliation and renewal. That is tough. That is a hard one. And I wish you guys the best. Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting how you see the synastry of what Pluto's doing in one person's chart and how a planet could be hitting someone else, another planet in another person's chart, and they end up bearing resemblance to what's, you know, the same event. I hope that you guys are able to, I hope that it's the best outcome for everyone. That's the only thing I can say, because I don't pretend to know exactly what's right in any situation, but that's tough. And I hope it goes well for both of you. Pluto conjoined my natal Mars in the fourth house of home and property. I moved three times to three different states in 2021, and we had to get rid of all of our major possessions to accommodate this. My husband and I now have literally one pickup truck worth of items. Nice. That is such a Pluto Mars fourth house kind of ordeal. There's a lot of change, initiation of a lot of activity around roots and where you're living, a purgation of some sort relative to your belongings and your home and living environment. So that's pretty profound. All right. Let's see here. Okay. A Jupiter return in Aquarius. This year, as Jupiter returned, this is meaning Jupiter is coming back to the sign of Aquarius where it was located in this person's natal chart, I was introduced to a few teachers and teachings that absolutely changed my life. I could finally alchemize the spiritual, science, and intuition logic oppositions in my mind, and things became a lot more unified. By the way, Achyuta, you are one of those teachers. Well, thank you so much. I'm glad that this channel could serve in that process for you. That is fantastic feedback. And yeah, what an honor to participate in anyone's learning of subjects that I also dearly love. So that's why I do this. There's nothing more fun to me than talking about this kind of subject material and finding other people who find it inspiring and life-changing. Mercury conjoined Venus and Pluto in my seventh house, opposing natal Venus in my first house. I'm trying to come to terms with my partner's libido being at least half as strong as my own. I'm realizing how much of my identity is wrapped up in my sexual confidence and being desired. Although I recognize this is something I need to address and grow past to let the deeper part of myself bloom, the feelings of longing and having to either face or avoid a kind of continual soft rejection is devastating. This realization that began a few days ago is becoming heavier and darker. I'm not past the feeling sorry for myself stage yet. This existential identity crisis is going to be tough. Yes. That's the Venus retrograde that's happening right now for many people. You could be going through something like that. And obviously if you got Pluto opposing your natal Venus, that can bring up very similar kinds of themes. I wish you guys the best. And, you know, maybe there's always, to me, there's always a benefit in telling the truth. I don't know if you've done that yet or not, but you know, it's, I'm like the astrological Delilah. Oh, sweetie. Just have you told him how you feel? You know, so, I'm playing, but just, you know, I wish the best for you guys. And maybe you can, you know, talk about that, open up about that if possible. This one is maybe the most interesting one. Jupiter retrograde in Pisces. While Jupiter was retrograde in Pisces in July, I was walking down the street. Someone came up to me and offered me magic mushrooms. I took them. What? Had a dark night of the soul. Really? Woke up and saw a video on YouTube on how to quit marijuana, watched it, Googled Marijuana Anonymous, went to a meeting, and now have 176 days of sobriety. Well, screw me. I guess they are magical. That's awesome. Thank you. I can't believe that happened to you, first of all. That's very magical. It does not surprise me that psychedelics would deliver some insights like that, frankly. If it weren't for psychedelics, I would not have rid myself of a number of addictions that I was dealing with, and, you know, in my early 20s. So, hey, maybe that person was an angel, just a magic mushroom dispensing angel that you met. You know, some advice for next time: you might want to be careful about taking drugs from random people who offer them to you on the street. But aside from that, I like how it went for you. I'm playing. Congrats on your sobriety. That's fantastic. All right. Jupiter conjoining my North Node this year. I have been all-consumingly ambitious. I feel impatient to manifest all the things I'm working on. I've been frustrated with the physical needs of the body, like sleeping, eating, and exercising. It's been interesting because it's so Jupiterian, very good and ambitious, but with almost too much intensity to physically handle. Well, don't forget that Rahu in Indian astrology and the North Node in ancient astrology do not represent what you're supposed to go and do to level up and make God happy with you. No, the North Node tends to represent things that are Jupiterian, that grow bigger, or that represent our desires and ambitions. And for Indian astrologers, often those ambitions are things that greatly complicate our lives, not make them better or level us up in some way spiritually. So another consideration for you, or a different point of view to consider. And just broadly speaking, I would say, look, it's not surprising that you get kind of, you know, manic and ambitious with Jupiter on the North Node. That can definitely happen. All right. Saturn Uranus square engaging a natal Saturn Uranus square in my birth chart, forming a fixed grand cross. In February, as this happened, I lost control of my legs in 2021, started having random bouts of paralysis. After numerous neurological tests and facing a frightening degenerative diagnosis, I discovered I had lumbar stenosis, severe narrowing of the spine around the spinal cord. Weeks of physical therapy, traction, and inversion tables turned into months, ending in June. Then on Christmas Day, I got exactly what I asked for, a yoga trapeze to continue my healing journey at home. Well, that sounds very Saturn and Uranus-like. The physical constraints followed by the need to get really innovative as a way of dealing with constraints. I wish you mobility and freedom. I hope that that comes to you. Thank you for sharing too. Oh, this one's hard. Lunar eclipse in, let me just make sure I got, yeah, lunar eclipse in May of 2021 in the seventh house. My husband died suddenly of natural causes. That's really hard. That's a hard one. It's not something that everyone should be scared of. By the way, if you're listening to this and you think, well, I have lunar eclipses coming up in my seventh when my spouse died, it's very rare that I see something like that. But one of the potential significations of lunar eclipses in the seventh will be the end of a relationship, a spouse falling on hard times, a spouse experiencing ill health. Those are some of the more challenging transits. And very occasionally I will see with lunar eclipses in the seventh that a spouse passes. And I'm really sorry to hear that that happened for you. That must have been just completely heartbreaking. So I just hope that you're doing okay now and that you're healing up the best that you can, that you take time for the grieving process, all that good stuff. Solar eclipse in Gemini conjoining my natal Venus in the sixth house. So here's a benefic in the sixth house. And I received two working grants for my art and lots of short distance travel for work. It's nice when you see people who receive some kind of aid or help in some kind of work project. When you have a benefic in the sixth, like Jupiter, or something like Venus in the sixth, and it gets an eclipse on it, you'll often find that things that you're working and slaving away at that you need support for, like social workers, for example, who need a grant to get some kind of project off the ground in their field of expertise or whatever, it's often a kind of Venus sixth house vibe that you'll get when you're receiving some kind of aid or support like that. That's a really great example of the astrology and a great story. Congratulations. I hope that it's very successful for you. Jupiter into Pisces. My husband is a Scorpio rising, which places Jupiter in Pisces in his fifth house. He made a choice to do a vasectomy. We know we don't want more children. We have six between us. And a month later, today, as Jupiter has just ingressed into his fifth house in Pisces, his oldest daughter told us that she is pregnant and will bring my husband his first grandchild. It gives us the happiness and gratitude that we needed to get over our own decision to stop having children. Life is truly beautiful. That is profound. I love that as you know, you made the decision to stop expanding, it in some ways is comes just as the doors open for the next generation to expand. And by the way, if Jupiter enters your fifth house in Pisces, it doesn't mean always that you'll have a child. It could mean that your children are having children. So that's a fantastic example of a pregnancy transit with a very fertile Jupiter entering the fifth. Congrats. That'll be really fun. I hope you guys really enjoy being grandparents. Being a Sag rising, Saturn and Jupiter in Aquarius have been working over my third house. This year, my two mentors inspired and supported me to achieve certification in my career in pursuit of my licensure. I passed my first exam on the day Jupiter trined Mercury, which was conjoined my natal Saturn in Libra. Fantastic. Yeah, I love the way that development of skills, skill acquisition, testing, certification, all those kinds of things when you have Saturn in the third house, Jupiter in the third house, you'll see those things happen a lot. I can't tell you how many times I've seen parents whose kids, by the way, are ready to get their driver's license when they have Saturn or Jupiter in their third house. It's just a funny thing. Anyway, in 2021, Saturn squared my natal sun in Scorpio, or as I call it, nothing worked. Oh, Saturn sun transits can be so frustrating. I had to redo a lawsuit. It was long, painstakingly, and it had, to my surprise, no result. Uranus was also opposing my sun at the time of the verdict, and the verdict was no verdict. I published a book. The end process with the publishing house was a disaster. There were internal arguments on their side, and the book flopped. Fun fact, I was always sick with some mysterious ailment that persisted against treatment when the transit was about to become exact. Zero stars, would not recommend. So fantastic. Thank you for that story. That's another really good. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is, I mean, first of all, I just have to say these were great stories. There were so many more. I just picked some that I thought were representative of a wide variety of different experiences people were having out there. I'd love to hear more of your stories. If you want to drop them in the comment section of today's video, use the hashtag grabbed and put transit of 2021 and tell me what your biggest astrological story of the year was. Maybe we'll share a little bit more of those next week or something. Now I want to end with a few reflections. Reflections are, you know, anything that you, for me, a reflection means anything you learned, took away, an aha moment, something that through which sharing other people might get to share in that realization too, because it's maybe there somehow hanging in the ether for everyone. Not everyone has the same kind of realization. So I don't mean to make this sound like these are the realizations of the year. These are just mine. But I hope that you find something useful in them. This is also inspired heavily by my friend, Sean Nygaard, who is a fantastic astrologer. And as I said, I went out to dinner with him last night and we sat and talked and we went and saw this movie called Nightmare Alley. It's Guillermo del Toro, I think is the director's name. And he's the Pan's Labyrinth guy. Anyway, it was a fantastic movie and a really great conversation that we had about astrology. And so some of these insights really come from things that he has said in previous talks and also just the way that he inspires me with his way of thinking about astrology. Also from our similar love of James Hillman and James Hillman's approach to psychology and archetypes. So the first insight I want to share is this. People are always asking me, how does the astrology of 2022 look? Is it better than 2021? And they actually, they don't actually talk like that, but they'll say, come on, is it getting any better? And I want to say this. No, it's never going to be any better. The astrology is, I don't think it's getting better. In fact, for people who live in what could broadly be referred to as the spirit of the times, if you live and ride on the roller coaster of the spirit of the times, no, things are probably going to get worse before they get better. Or at the very least, things will always look roughly the same. There's always ups and downs in every year. There's always a roller coaster of positive moments, setbacks. You know, there's moments of great gain and there's moments of loss. And, you know, broadly speaking, not that every person experiences exactly the same thing every year, but broadly speaking, there's always a merry-go-round of positive and negative transits every year that are, you know, just as up and down as the moon's latitude is. Now, the moon's always moving up, ascending above the ecliptic, and fortune rises, and the moon drops down below the ecliptic and fortune falls. And these dualities, never ending in infinite circles without beginning or end, were, you know, endogenous to this dimension that we live in, according to ancient astrologers. So no, 2022's astrology doesn't look any better than 2021's. But by that, I don't mean that 2021 was this terrible thing and 2020 was a terrible thing and 2022 is only going to be worse. No. It doesn't, the astrology year by year is no different than in some ways the cyclical patterns of weather in, you know, a given place. Their patterns change gradually over time. Temperatures change, you know, but there are long, big patterns and there are small repeating cycles. And those things don't generally change. There's kind of a reason that astrology is about predicting things, because things move in cycles with the planets and nothing really changes in that respect. So for those people who are living with what we would call the spirit of the times, if we ride that roller coaster every year, what's going to happen? If you know, I'm a part of the collective and I want to know what's happening in the collective. Well, the collective is going to go through lots of upheavals. The collective is going to face terror and horror and joy and bliss. And that's what the collective is going to go through. And there will be new fads and there will be new trends and there will be new buzzwords and new things happening in different economies and different governments rising and falling and different stars and celebrities rising and falling. And then if we live with the spirit of the times, astrology will be nothing more for us than trends and fads dressed in the costumes of, you know, spirituality. It'll just be like, you know, we don't want astrology to be celestial gossip. We're just living according to a very light sense of what's going on. Like what's happening for everyone right now, right? This kind of, this is not the level at which astrology is really inviting us to engage with the cosmos, to engage with ourselves, or to live with each other. The astrology never gets better for those living in the spirit of the times. It always gets better for those living with the spirit of the depths. And this distinction is something that Sean was talking about last night. He's talked about it at length in talks he's given, so I don't want to steal this idea from him. And it comes in turn from people like James Hillman and Carl Jung and others. So it has a history behind it. But how can you know that the soul really likes the spirit of the depths? So what's the difference between the spirit of the times, living according to the spirit of the times, and living according to the spirit of the depths? We were talking about this at dinner last night. Well, the spirit of the depths, and I remember James Hillman saying this in a talk that he gave on why it's so hard to go home for the holidays. And Sean brought this up last night too. the soul, in if you want to think about it this way, the soul likes a mess. The soul likes to be engaged in a mess where there's not a clear sense of what's going on. Mistakes are made. Things get tangled and complicated emotionally. There are multiple things that present themselves as real, true, and important at once. And you have to feel into them. You have to reflect upon them. So feeling into things, cultivating intimacy with things, reflecting upon things, things that are messy and complicated, things where there are multiple truths that can only be held by the soul's multiplicitous nature. That's the spirit of the depths. We study astrology so that we can reflect upon these planetary archetypes and bring them all in, which is to say, bring all experience into soulfulness, into deep contemplation, reflection, meditation, so that our lives become just rich with a kind of symbolic intimacy, relational intimacy with these symbols. It's not what's happening for everybody. What's 2022 going to be about? That's too clean. It's too simple. It's too much like a gossip column or trend that we're following. Really, to get the most out of astrology, and if we stand any chance of understanding anything about the zeitgeist or the spirit of the times and what astrology is saying about it or whatever, you have to start with soulfulness. You can't have the reflective space necessary to see what's happening in the collective unless you're individuating apart from it. The two have to happen simultaneously. It's not that the spirit of the times is meaningless. Is that the spirit of the people? Most people try to live in the spirit of the times, which is like trying to figure out what's going to happen in 2022, like you're trying to figure out how to fit into some group in your high school. The spirit of the depths requires us to engage with these symbols in the year ahead, no matter what they are. Who cares what they are? Who cares if they're good or bad, right? Who cares what the astrology of 2022 is or how it differs from 2021 or 2020 or any other year? Who cares? My goal is to relate to experience through multiplicity, through the polytheism of our imaginations, through paradox, through reflection, through depth, through imagination, through relationship, and let the experiences yield forth images and insights. And as that happens, we individuate, we become more soulful. And only from that soulful space can we reflect in a way that is contextually, relationally meaningful for anyone or anything around us upon whatever we perceive to be happening in some collective. The spirit of the depths and the soul and soulfulness and a soulful way of relating to astrology is less focused on its outward identification. So how am I defining myself outwardly? Where do I stand? What is my political party? It's like the spirit of the times has to figure out what group it fits into, or which niche it belongs to, what trend it's following, right? Am I giving thumbs up to this trend or thumbs down or whatever? And there's a time and space for that, but it's the same kind of people that will end up, you know, drunk under the Christmas tree, bemoaning how crappy 2021 was and praying to God that 2022 is better. The spirit of the depth says, hey, look, don't do that. Heraclitus once said that the soul is explored forever to a depth beyond report. People who are soulful are hesitant to say, I'm a part of this or that happening in the spirits of the times. Because their soul, if they're honest, knows I keep probing and I keep becoming uncertain. And the uncertainty is a core part of how I'm developing love and relationship with others, with reality, with experience. It's not my certainty about what I am or what is real. It's the uncertainty that keeps the relationship going, exploring, moving inward to a depth beyond report. Someone said in Sean's talk that he did for our class not long ago, they said, does 2022 look like it's more hopeful? And Sean said, I need more options or more words when talking about 2022 other than hope. Above, we were talking about this last night as well, in Dante's Inferno, above the entrance to hell is inscribed the words, abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Well, the same words could be true if we want to talk about the underworld. Replace hell, for example, the Christian hell, with the idea of the underworld, with soulfulness and with depth. If you want soulfulness and you want depth, you can't go probing in with the idea that you will save something, heal something, fix something, that you're going in on some kind of hopeful, you know, evangelistic mission to save something. Now, experience is its own reward. It reveals its divinity specifically when you have abandoned hope that something will come out of it. Faith is not the same as hope. Psychological faith means moving into something, trusting that something will be discovered, but not hoping that there will be a good outcome. We move beyond good and bad. We move beyond hoping for good and bad. And instead, we move into some kind of soulful faithfulness that experience itself will yield something fertile and rich. And that's not the same as something good. It's different. So abandon hope, all ye. Replace hell with the underworld. Underworld with soul and spirit of the depths. Replace the word hope also with heroism. One of the things that defines a lot of the way we look at astrology is in terms of heroism. Is the astrology in line with the heroic narrative that I have in mind for 2022 for myself personally or for the groups that I belong to or politically or for society or whatever? We're oversaturated with heroism. I was reflecting on this last night as we were watching Nightmare Alley and feeling like I was watching a piece of real art as opposed to the 375th Marvel movie, right? More and more and more, it's heroes. The Marvel universe is expanding into the metaverse, I was told last night. I found out last night, and I thought, well, there, the hero is now has to, it can't, the hero can't just have, you know, a Marvel universe. It now has to have a metaverse because the hero just keeps colonizing everyone and everything with hopes and victories and literalism. Endless. Not that I like some of the Marvel movies. They're fun. I used to read Marvel comic books when I was a kid. Don't get me wrong. There's a hero's journey that is worth it, is interesting. But my God, can we let go of the hero and hope narratives a little bit and see what else is there? Can we diversify what goodness looks like, what goodness feels like, beyond simple moral dichotomies? So this year, what I recommend is, if you're wondering, will the astrology of 2022 be any better? Rephrase the question and say, will I be any more soulful this year? Because that's what I know I have to do for myself. I have to re-engage with these symbols every day in a new way so that my life feels like the dead, the spirits, the gods, the daimons, the planets, the plants, that the life is teeming with complex forms of life. And that it doesn't make me more certain about who I am or what's going on. It makes me less certain about what outcome to hope for, but it places me right in the present moment, filled with a quiet, mysterious, sort of fearful gratitude. That's where I want to be in 2022. I know that if I'm there, things will go well. And the more time I spend there, the less certain of which group I belong to, the less certain I feel of, you know, what is the right outcome for me or for anyone? And yet the more and more I am amazed by every experience and by the orchestration of this beautiful, fiery cosmos. So in Bhakti Yoga, we say that the process of bhakti is one of grace descending and not one of climbing upward through practice, focus, and ambition towards some kind of goal. There's no state we're trying to reach for in bhakti yoga. You guys know I love to share things about bhakti, but rather through devotion, depth, and soulfulness, we start to receive a kind of divine consciousness. We start to see that reality is permeated with divinity and that its purpose is nothing more than itself. And love comes from this realization. So let's be devoted to our 2022 in depth and soulfulness. Let's abandon hope so that we can find something that our astrological faith gives us that can only be found when we set hope aside. I know that might sound strange, but that's the way I'm choosing to think about it for 2022, and I hope you get what I'm saying. Thank you guys for a great 2021. It has been fantastic to spend the year with you all. Remember, you have until tomorrow morning, one day left to pitch into the Kickstarter. If you still want to support this channel in the year ahead, pick up half off one of my classes, a year ahead reading, the astrology of 2022 or whatever. I love all of you guys. Happy New Year.